Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Vav Amud Bet, four lines from the bottom. Matznitin, the loker of Yeshua ben Karcha. Our Mishnah does not follow the position of Yeshua ben Karcha. The Danya of Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, Milve Bishtar, Ein Yifrei Mehen. If you have an outstanding loan with them that is documented in a contract, then you can't collect from them during this period of time. Milva Peh, if it's an oral loan, Nifrei Mehen, then you can collect from them. Ifnei Shukum Mitzil Mi Adam. Because it's like saving from them. Obviously, our Mishnah has two positions in it. It has the position of the Chachamim, which is that it's never allowed because of the Simcha that's associated with collecting. And the Sheet of Rabbi Udo says that it is allowed because it is negatively associated with the repayment of the loan. Here, Rabbi Shua ben Karcha says, by the Shtar you can't collect, by Balpeh you can collect, and doesn't fit with either of those positions within our Mishnah. Now that we've mentioned Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, we're going to spend a lot of time on Halachot of Rabbi Shua ben Karcha that don't necessarily all correlate with our Masechta. Yotiv Rabbi Yosef, Acharei de Rabbi Abba. Yotiv Rabbi Abba, Kamei de Rabbi Huna, Yotiv Kamar. Hilchoto, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. The loch is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Hilchoto, Rabbi Yehuda. And the loch is like Rabbi Yehuda. Hilchoto, Rabbi Yeshua, Hada Amran. The loch is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, as we just mentioned over here, that we make a distinction between oral loans and documented loans. By documenting those where there's not necessarily a fear that you're going to lose the loan, there we say wait until afterwards and then get the repayment at a later date. We saw the Baalei HaTosafot on Daf Bet Amud Aleph who said, for us today, everything's at risk, and therefore even with a documented loan, even with the stamp of the courts, you still collect whenever you can collect because you're lucky just to get your money back. But if it's Baal Pet, then he says you take whatever you can get because there you have no way to evidence the loan if he's paying back the money. You gotta take it at that time, because otherwise you may never see it again. Ki Rabbi Yehuda, the locha is like Rabbi Yehuda, what is that speaking about? It's not, it's a Mishnah in Baba Kama, in the ninth parak. Anotein, tzemer latzaba. Person gives wool over to the dyer, leads balo adom, and he wanted it to be dyed red. Utsivao, shachor. Instead, he dyed it black. Shachor, he wanted it to be black. Utsivao, adom, and instead, he made it red. Rabbi Umer, Notein lo d'mei tzemro. It gives him the value of the tzemer. So in essence, what Rabbi Meir says is that you are kone, the item, at the time that you change from what you were supposed to do. You are deemed, as Rashi says here, to be like a gazlan. You then acquired it, and then any improvement beyond that point accrues to you because it is yours now. So he pays the person who gave him the tzemer, the amount of the tzemer, because that's what he ruined for him. And then any improvement, any shevach that's beyond that, Rabbi Meir says, accrues to the dyer himself. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im ha-shevach yeter al yetziah, if the benefit or the improvement in the wool exceeds the value of the inputs that were here, the cost of the dye, the cost of the urn being put up, and the fire, and the labor, all of that stuff, is it everything included? Then you pay him, notein lo et yetziah. Then you give him the expenditures. Im ha-yetziah yeter al shevach. If the cost was greater than the benefit that accrued in the wool now because of the change in color, then notein lo et shevach. You pay the lesser of the cost or benefit that is associated with the wool. That's the view of Rabbi Yehuda. The Baalei Tosafot point out over here that this is against Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda's positions in other places. Rabbi Meir in general says that whenever there's a gazlan, you have to pay for whatever improvements happen, and you owe the guy for all the benefits that happen, and you can't just take the wool and say, okay, I paid you for the wool and I'm done. So the Baalei Tosafot explained that Rabbi Meir believes it's a knas. In other places, we penalize the individual for the theft. And since they stole it, even though maybe they have a kinyan on it, we don't want them benefiting from that. And therefore, we penalize them in that way. Over here, he didn't do it intentionally. It was a mistake. He mistakenly thought he was doing the right thing and put the wrong dye on. So here, we're not going to penalize him. And therefore, he acquires the wool and it remains his. Rabbi Yehuda says in other places that there is a kinyan for a gazlan. And a gazlan gets a kinyan right away, and if anything that accrues afterwards accrues to the gazlan. Over here he says, the lesser of the cost or the shevach. The Baalei Tosafot of here explained that, in general, Rabbi Yehuda believes that he's koneh the gazlan because he has intent to steal. Over here, the poel, the one who is working on this, has no intent to steal. It was an accidental thing that happened, and therefore, we don't deem it as a shinoi for a kinyan. So that's why their positions are different in other places. But this is the Mishnah in Baba Kama, and here we're saying the locha is Rabbi Yehuda. Adrinu Rabbi Yosef Lape, Rabbi Yosef turned his face away because obviously he did not feel that this was appropriate. Because Bishlama locha Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, Itzrich. You need to tell me that Allah is like Mishum Mekarcha. Sagadat Kamina Yochid Verabim Allah Kirabim. You have him arguing in our Mishnah. Mishnah's a Rabim. He is a Yachid. You would think the Allah is like Rabim. Kamash Malon, Allah Ki Yachid. Over here, the rule is that we're going to follow Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. That's an exceptional enough reason to tell us that Allah is like Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. El Allah Ki Rabbi Yehuda Olamali. Why do you have to tell me that Allah is like Rabbi Yehuda? Pshita. That's a given. The Machloket. Ve'achar Kach Stam. Hilchata Ki Stam. Whenever you have a Machloket in the Mishnah, and afterwards you have a Stam Mishnah that follows one of the two parties, then you should believe that that is the halacha, because it gave you the opinions, and then it decided that one of the mishnayot afterwards, they only go with one of the opinions. That means they've decided that they think that's the primary opinion. Machloket is found in Baba Kama, Bisatam b'Baba Metzia. Later on in Baba Metzia, you will find that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda. So now, why is it that you have to tell me halacha to Rabbi Yehuda? It's a given that you have a machloket b'achar kach stam, that's not. We have the Mishnah in Baba Metzia says, anybody who makes a change, he has the lower position. Anybody who backs out of a transaction, he has the worst position in the negotiation. So that's the Mishnah, where we say to call it Mishaneh. Here the worker changed what he was doing, and therefore he is the one who has Yadoa Tachtona, which is like Rabbi Yehuda. He either gets the lower of the Shevach or the Yitziyah. Why do you need somebody that looks like Rabbi Yehuda? If you have already a machloket, v'achar kach, stam. The Baal HaTosafot point out that he doesn't understand necessarily why the Gemara is asking for machloket, v'achar kach, stam. We also have the Gemara in Erevin. The Gemara in Erevin lays out all the principles of psak when it comes to machlokot. One of those principles is Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, halacha ke Rabbi Yehuda. So without machloket, v'achar kach, stam, if you have a machloket between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, we would pass them like Rabbi Yehuda anyway. So there's another reason why you shouldn't do it. The Baal HaTosafot say, if you tell me not everybody agrees in those principles in Erevin, that's Rabbi Yochanan's position about those, Rav disagreed with that. And here we're talking about a case where it's Talmidim of Rav, and maybe they didn't necessarily accept those principles. He says, but the principle of Machloket V'achar Kach Stam is also found there. And that means if you think that Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Halacha Rabbi Yehuda is not relevant over here, then why is Machloket V'achar Kach Stam also relevant over here? They argue on that as well. So the Baal HaTosafot in the end come to a compromised view, which is that even if you don't think Machloket V'achar Kach Stam, the halacha is like the Stam, it still makes the Stam Mishnah K'Rabim. The Stam Mishnah will give you the status of being the majority or the Rabim. So now you need a Rabim to offset that, or it'd be Yachid V'Rabim. So even if you don't hold the Machloket V'achar Kach Stam, you should have still thought that Rabbi Yehuda's position now is deemed to be the Rabim, and that's why Rabbi, when he organized or authored the Mishnayot, he used to make some of the Mishnayot Stam Mishnayot, because he wanted to give the power to the Mishnah of a Rabim, even though it's a Yachid that's speaking. So a Stam Mishnah gives that power, and that's why you should have passed him like it. Rav Huna, why wasn't he governed by this? Mishum dein seder the Mishnah. The Mishnah has no order to it. The Ikar Meimar, Satam Tana Bereisha, that first he did the Stam Mishnah, V'achar Kach Machloket. And there, by Stam V'achar Kach Machloket, the Stam Mishnah has no meaning. Mar says, if that's the case, Kol Machloket V'achar Kach Stam, Leima Ein Seder the Mishnah. You've just undermined this principle completely. You can never have a principle that involves order. When you have Machloket V'achar Kach Stam, you say the Loch is like Stam Mishnah. If the Mishnah is not in order, how do you ever use this principle at all? He's now negating the principle completely. Rav Yonah, Ki Lo Amrinan Ein Seder. When do we don't subscribe to this idea that there's no Seder to the Mishnah? That's b'chada mesechta, within one mesechta. B'trei mesechta, amrina. When it deals with two mesechta, we say ain't seder the Mishnah. Basically, Rashi, in other places, explains this principle, which is that when it comes to Rabbi teaching the students, you can assume that when he taught the students in a single mesechta, he taught the mesechta in order. And therefore, the Mishnayot in that mesechta are found in order. What you don't know is which mesechta he taught them first, and which Mesechta he taught them second. Even today, when we teach children Mishnayot, they'll start in the middle of Baba Metzia. That doesn't mean that Baba Metzia is the first Mesechta. It's just the Mesechta that they chose to learn first. So now, when he organized the Mishnayot, you have to explain why Rabbi put Mesechtot in this order, and what's the connection between the Mesechta, which we do every time we start a Mesechta. We try to connect between what does that have to do, or why is it found in this Seder? Why is it found after this Mesechta or before the next Mesechta? But with regards to teaching the students, there's no evidence that this was the order of the Masechtot. And therefore, in terms of order of Masechtot, you can't learn anything because you don't know which one he taught the students first. Within a single Masechta, then you can tell me that the order of Mishnayot matters because he clearly taught them in order in that Masechta. And so therefore, when you say Machloke Bechar Chag Stam, within a single Masechta, that has bearing, Rav Huna thinks. Outside of that Masechta, then it does not have bearing. So now Rav Yosef says, Kula Nizikin Chada Masechta. So that we've seen a number of times that Rav Yosef and others believe that all of the Bubbas are considered to be a single Masechta. And therefore, Bubba Kama, Bubba Metzia, and Bubba Batra are considered all to be one Masechta. If that's the case, then order will matter. And if you have a Machloket in Bubba Kama, and a Stam Mishnah in Bubba Metzia, that means you have a Machloket Bechar Kach Stam. So the Machloket in the end between Rav Yosef and Rav Huna here is how do we view the Bubbas? Do we view them as separate Masechta, and therefore it has no bearing on Machloket Bechar Kach Stam? But you learn it as a single Masechta, and there would be governed by Machloket Bechar Chag Stam. That's why Rav Yosef was upset about this psak that came from Rav Huna. Bibai Deina, some suggest that this is what upset Rav Yosef. Shum Daftoni La Gabe Hilchotop Sikta. Because it is written, the girsa that we have in here is Gabe, which is the girsa of Rashi, that it's written by Talochot Sukot, which is Kol Mishaneh Yadol Atachtona. Whoever changes as the lower hand, meaning that they are of the worst position here. Anybody backs away from it also has the lower position. Or in the negotiation or whatever has to be solved afterwards, you have the worst position. So what Rashi says is you have all these halachot psukot over there. It's giving you a line in the Mishnah, it's just listing halachot. And the halacha of kol mishaneh yadol ha-tachtono doesn't belong there. It's not the topic of the Mishnayot over there. So why was it placed there? Because you have a list of halachot like this. And when it's included in a list like that, then that is the halacha. And that's why, similar to things that are found in Ediot, where we have certain masechtot, or certain ways of being listed in the Mishnah, which indicates that that's halacha psuka. So Rashi says the fact that it didn't belong there, and they put it next to other halachot psukot, that's why you have the word gabe. Next to hilchot psikta, the halacha is like that, memra. The Baalei Tosafot don't like that only because they think that they are many who believe that chol chozer bo yadoa tachtana is not a halacha. We don't pass in that way. And therefore, if you didn't pass in way this way, that would also color kol mishaneh yadol ha-tachtono, because we wouldn't pass in that way either. What the Baalei Tosafot do is take out the word gabay and say that it is mishum tachtoni la hilchotah psikta. It's written as a halacha psuka, which means it's using the language of a halacha psuka. Doesn't mean the halacha is like all those things that are mentioned there, but it writes it in a way which says, this is the halacha, this is the halacha. When you do that, that's indicative of the fact that they believed kol mishaneh yadol ha-tachtono that the halacha should follow Rabbi Yehuda, or that this type of Mishnah, when it's written this way, gives more power to the position of Rabbi Yehuda. So that's the way the Baalei Tosafot learn it. There are others try to bridge the gap between the Baalei Tosafot and Rashi and say, even in the end, if we don't paskin like chozer bo ha-tachtona, nevertheless, it's written in a position where it is halacha psuka. And therefore, when you connect the two, even if the halacha is not like one, doesn't mean the halacha is not like the other. Tan Rabbanan, lo yomar adam lechavero, hanirah shetamod imi la'erev. So here, the word hanirah, you have to figure out what it means. Rashi and Tosafot disagree slightly about its meaning. But a person should not say to his friend, hanirah. So Rashi says, havo navo. It means similar to havo navo. We will be staying together this evening. We'll be able to stand together, sit together this evening. On the other hand, Baalei Tosafot, if you look in there, hanirah, say, perishriya, hanirah be'enecha. It's a question. It's rather than a statement, it's posed as a question, which is, hanirah, shutamod imi la'erev? Will it be that you are going to be together with me this evening? So now we're speaking about a case where it's on Shabbat, and he bumps into the guy, and he's saying, well, aren't we going to be together this evening? Rabbi Shua ben Karcho omer, amer adam lechaviro, hanirah, shutamod imi la'erev. Rabbi Shua ben Karcho says it's totally fine to say that. Obviously, the question is here, are you allowed on Shabbat to engage someone about something that you're going to do after Shabbat? Now here, in this instance, he wants him to join him, to work with him after Shabbat, which would probably, in most instances, should be a problem. Why are you allowed to engage someone in an activity that's for after Shabbat on Shabbat itself? Though Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcho says no problem. The reason it's no problem is because of the way that he worded it. He worded it in a way, he says, either according to Rashi, it looks like we'll be spending time together after Shabbat. Or, according to Balei Tosafot says, are you going to be joining us after Shabbat? What's absent from his statement are two things. What they're going to engage in after Shabbat. And number two is that he's going to pay him for whatever it is that they're engaged in. So he does not mention the type of work that they're going to be engaged in, the malacha. And he doesn't mention the fact that they're going to get paid. He simply says, we're going to get together. You're allowed to speak about items that do not have malacha involved with them. So, for instance, in the situations many times people speak about, if you're traveling, and they say, oh, when are you flying back to the U.S.? So that you can't say to someone, because that involves malacha in terms of the ability to travel, leaving tchum, getting on the plane. That you can't ask the person. What you can ask the person is, when do you return to the U.S.? So when you say, when do you return to the U.S., there's no malacha implied in the statement. Obviously, everybody knows that in the end, that's how you're going to have to get there. But your statement does not involve something that speaks about the malacha. There is an Isur on Shabbos of a Davar Davar. You're not allowed to speak about items that involve malacha. You're not allowed to engage in speech or transactions or things like that because of a Davar Davar. Your Dibur on Shabbat has to be different. Therefore, the way you ask the question makes a difference. Whether you include malacha or something that involves malacha or must involve malacha in the question or not will make a difference in terms of the posing of the question. So you can ask, when will you be returning to the U.S.? You cannot ask, when you will be flying to the U.S.? And similarly, you can ask someone, when will they be going to a certain location? You can ask, when are they going to be driving to that location? Again, the manner of speech is different. Then also involves how much is involved in terms of preparation for melacha, for divrei mitzvah. You can prepare before Shabbat is over. If it's not a divrei mitzvah, then you're not allowed to prepare on Shabbat for that which will be after Shabbat, again, unless, like here, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, where the statement involves no indication of what's going to happen afterwards. They both may know about it, but there's no indication of what's going to happen, and therefore it is mutar. Again, this is more of a Shabbat topic, just as brought here, because Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. So I'm Rabbi Bachanan, Rabbi Yochanan, Hilchotok Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Once again here, the locha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Tan Rabbanan, Anishala Chacham, Vitimei. Person goes and asks a question, gets a psak halacha about something, and the chacham says, it's tamei, it's not kosher. Lo yishal la chacham v'yitaher. Don't go ask another chacham and have him be matir, the object, to say that it's tahor. You cannot shop the psak. La chacham v'asar. If you went to a chacham and said it was asur, lo yishal la chacham v'yatir. Don't go ask another chacham and get it to be mutar. Say, hayu shnayim. If you have two individuals, echad mitamei ve'echad mitaher, one of them says it's tamei, one says it's tahor, echad usir ve'echad matir, one of them says it's asur, one says it's mutar, in a case where he approached both of them simultaneously, they were sitting together in the Beit Midrash, so here he's not shopping the psak, but they're giving him two different piskei halacha in this case. If one of them is clearly of a higher stature than the other individual, whether it's in chokhmah, wisdom, ube minyan here, it's not clear what it means, whether this is an individual who has more students, or is this an individual who is counted amongst those that are of a higher stature, gedolei Yisrael, or even possibly minyan could be the age of the individual, who's older in this case. Then aleich acharav, then you follow that position. Vim lav, if it's still a stalemate, or you don't know which one to follow, aleich acharav machmir. You go after the one who's more machmir. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha omer, b'shel Torah, halech achara machmir. When it's a Torah law, you go to Chumrah. B'shel Sofrim, if it is a rabbinic law, halech achara mekel. You go after the one who is mekel in that situation. So again, Rabbi Yosef, hilchotak Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Here we follow the locha like Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, that dini doraita, go to Chumrah. Dini derabonan, go to Kula. Right, we'll speak about two things here. First of all, Tosafot here brings an interesting machloket down as to the application of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. When it comes to a question about halacha, it's obvious that b'shel Torah we go to Achmir, b'shel Divrei Sofrim, b'shel Derabon we go to Hakel, and that's what Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is presenting here. That's what we follow. The question comes up, in the Gemara many times you have multiple lishonot. The Gemara will give you a lishon and then say ikadamre. Some say this, or lishna achrina. The question is, when you have two lishonot in the Gemara, which of the two lishonot is binding? And the question really is Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha's din over here applicable in those cases? Does that govern? Or is there a different rule? If you look in the Balei Tosafot, where he says, b'shel Torah, alecha achara machmir, he says something very interesting. He says, Rashi ha'posek, Says Rashi is always pasek b'chol ikadamre shebetalmud v'shel Torah alecha chara machmir. Whenever you have an ikadamre, that's a Torah law, you always go the chumrah. That's what Rashi says throughout Shas. V'shel Sofrim, if it's a machloket about a din derabonon, alecha chara charon. You always go after the second lashon. The second lashon is the one that governs throughout Shas. So Rashi's principles are Torah law, you go the achmir. If it's a rabbinic law, always after the second mandamar. Viriva perish. The chol ikadamre, the gabi lashon rishon, keep tafel le ikar. Anytime you have an ikadamre, the first lashon is the major or the proper primary language. The ikadamre is secondary. That you don't count. And therefore, aloha ke lishnakama. The aloha is always like the lishnakama, because that's the primary view of the Gemara. The Gemara says bring you another alternative, but the primary was the first one they brought. Rabbeinu Tam perish. And here's the sheet of Rabbeinu Tam. Vidoraita lachumra, vidoraban on the kula. So he thinks Rabbi Yishuv ben Karchas din applies even to dual lishonot in the Gemara. When you have Nika Damre or you have Lishna Achrino, then that principle that Rabbi Yishuv ben Karchas lays out over here also applies in that case. You have a safek. What do you do in case of safek? The hachmir by Torah, the hakel by the Rabbanan. So he thinks that the order of how they're brought down makes no difference. I actually think the second lishon is more important and the Rifa thing the first one is more important. Doesn't matter according to Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Shimshon, Hayat Mifaresh, says that if we can, through the Gemara, either in other locations where it becomes clear that the Gemara favors one of the two positions, or even within that Gemara, that the Gemara continues to focus on one of the two, lishonot, then in that case, that halacha is like that. So then we would ignore these rules when the Gemara's stam seems to follow one of the two positions. So here you have, again, rules for dealing with this, and whether Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha applies over here. The actually more important Tosafot is the previous Tosafot, which is about shopping Piske Alocha. Here, the Gemara seems to indicate that if you get a Psak Alocha, you can't go ask someone else for a different Psak Alocha. Is that really true? The Bayi Tosafot here indicate, and it comes up in Gemarot in other places, which is that you're not allowed to go shop the Psak unless you identify to the person you're asking what the previous Psak was. And that you could go to another Rav and ask him the question, but you have to tell him, I already got a psak from so-and-so, and he said the following. And then the Bali Tosafot say, these are the following rules. If the first chacham was v'hal chumra, and said it was asur or tamei, the second chacham does not have a right to be matir, or to say that it's a tahor, unless either it's an egregious mistake, and it's so obvious that anybody would have known it's an open mishnah, it's an explicit shulchan aruch, whenever that, when it's egregious, he could tell them that, and he could say that, or the only other option is he has to go back to that chacham and convince him that he's wrong. And if he convinces him he's wrong and brings him over, then we can change the psak. And the other way around, he says, but abam hitir chaveiro, if the original psak was lekula, rashai le'asor, then he has a right to be machmir. He has a right to be oser. And then, so that's a question, right? Maybe it's not so worthwhile to shop the psak, but unless you think there's an egregious mistake there, then you can go to the other chacham and get the psak or have him try to convince the other individual that he was wrong in the original psak. Now that also does have nafkamino for the person who got the original psak. So many Rishonim believe, first of all, that for the person who got the original psak, he can't get any benefit from the change in psak. Because what's called Meshaveh Alei Chaticha Leisura, he made it for himself as if it is a chaticha of nevela. Because when he asked the psak and he got a psak that it's a sur, then it becomes like nevela to him. And even if someone else is mater afterwards, it's as if you admitted that this is nevela, and it doesn't matter whether it is or isn't nevela for you, it becomes a chaticha shel isura. For some people, so many people believe that that won't help the person who got the original psak, it might help in terms of other people. The second thing to discuss over here is who's the isur on. Our Gemara sounds like, and it seems in the Bali Tosafot, the isur is on the one seeking the psak, that he may not get another psak, he's the one who's restricted. The Rabbeinu Tam says that the restriction is not on that person, but on the second Rav. That he may not paskin against the first Rav, and the restriction's on him. Not on the party bringing the question, but on the party that's giving the psak. He doesn't have a right to speak out his psak when someone else is given a different psak. He can't argue explicitly on this other party if the other party was already asked and gave a psak aloha in this instance. So anyway, that's an interesting sugya that comes up in other places, but it's important to know that if you've asked a Rav for a psak, if you're going to go ask someone else, you have to disclose the fact that you already received the psak and that this was what you heard already. And then the other Rav has to deal with that and figure out whether he can change that. If he thinks differently, then he has to be careful how he deals with it based on whether he's going to Chumrah or the Kula. also as whether he can convince the other party that there's something wrong, again, unless there's an egregious mistake over here. So that's another Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. And then now we have Tanabanan. B'chulan shechazru ben, ein mekadlin otan olamit. Any one of them who backs away from it, we don't accept them forever. Divri Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, chazru ben b'matmoniot. If they retracted or went back quietly undercover, ein mekadlin otan, then we don't accept them. B'faresya, if it is public, mekadlin otan, then we do accept them. Igadamre. So here, right away, we have one of these cases. If they did this in private, we accept them. If it's done publicly, then we don't accept them. So far, we have no clue what this is speaking about. So Rashi explains over here that we're speaking about Gazlanim and Amei Haaretz. These are thieves in Amei Haaretz who want to change their status. They no longer want to be Gazlanim. They no longer want to be Amei Haaretz. They want to take on the Chaverut. They want to become Chaverim. And so therefore they accept to keep things like Tumat HaMasro, Tumat HaTara. They want to accept upon themselves this concept of Chaverut. So here Rashi reads the Tosfot says it's a Mishnah in Demai. Here the Gemara quotes it as a Tosefta from Demai. But here he says that B'chulan shechazru ben, when they do tshuva, ein mekadlin otam olamit. We don't accept them forever. Divrei Rabbi Meir. I mean, they're trying to change their status from being a gazlan or from being an amaret. Rabbi Meir says, we don't accept them. Once they've ruined it, once they're in that category, can't get out of it. Yehuda Meir, chazru ben b'matmoniot. If they privately try to do tshuva, we don't aim mekablin otam. We don't accept them. Bifar hesya, they do it publicly and they accept and they're acting in this way and they've changed their ways completely, then we do accept them. The ikadamre is, asu divrei b'matmoniot. If they sinned originally when they were gazlanim or amei haaretz, if they did it quietly, mekablin otam, then we accept their tshuva. On the other hand, if bifar hesya, if they did it publicly when they sinned, Rashi says, hoil pakru kol kach, since they threw off the yoke of heaven so much, I mean, they went so far as to do these things in public and not care about what people thought, for that reason, shuvei notin liban l'shuva tshuva, they can't really do tshuva. So that's the way Rashi reads it, and many of the Rishonim read it. The Baalei HaTosafot are bothered by this. Baalei HaTosafot are bothered by this type of concept in many places in Shas, and it's clear they're bothered by it because they're being affected by it, which is, how can you make a statement that a person can't do tshuva olamit? How could it be? That's not a possibility. You can't close the doors of tshuva. And as the Baalei HaTosafot would say, Rashi himself also says in other places, ein davar omed bifnei about tshuva. There's nothing that stops a person from doing tshuva. This has a major impact in the Gemara at the end of Menachot, where the Gemara there says that a Kohen that served in Beit Chonyo, a Kohen who served in a Bodah Zarah, may not return to serve in the Mikdash. He's disqualified and may never return. There, the Rishonim are facing a huge issue of apostates, or people who converted to Christianity in the time of the Middle Ages, and then they want to come back to Judaism. Well, they come back, they're going to be stripped of their kuhuna. So this Kohen, before he used to get the first Aliyah and Shul, used to dochen in Shul, he's going to come about Shuvah, and he'll be a regular guy in the Shul. So the Mishonim believe that that's going to stop the guy from coming back and doing Shuvah if you depose him from being a Kohen. He's not going to come back because he knows, everybody's going to know now that his status was stripped from him. And therefore, the Baalei HaTosafot over there, even Rashi seems to indicate similarly, say that ena davar omed bifnei tshuva, and we feel that this is going to impede their ability to tshuva, and therefore we allow Kohanim to return, to come back and dochen, and to act like Kohanim against the Mishnah, against the Gemara, because of that. The Baalei HaTosafot are saying something similar here, or expressing a similar sentiment. How could it be that people can't do tshuva? How could a mayor make a statement, ein mekablin otan olamit? It makes no sense to say that. Therefore, the Baalei HaTosafot have a reading of the Gemara that is just the opposite, I guess, of what everybody else does, which is that these are individuals who already accepted upon themselves to do Chavdivrei Chaverut. And now, when we say Chazru, Chazru is not returning from doing something bad, but returning, they are Chozer, as they call it in modern parlance, Chozer B'Sheila. They're stopping to keep Chaverut. That's what it means over here. In the Brayta, it's this is, a person accepted to be a chaver, and then after accepting it, chazru behen, they stop doing it, or they give it up, then Rabbi Meir says, you're done. You can't come and accept chaverut, and then stop, and then expect to be accepted again. We gave you a chance, you did it, once you ignored it, or you didn't take the opportunity properly, then you can't do it again. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, it depends. Chazru behen b'matmoniot, if they underhandedly started to cheat under the table and do things like that, then we don't accept them back again, because then they were putting on a face to the public as if they were keeping this chaverut, and in the end they were under the table, they were violating everything. So then we're not going to accept them because they are people who cheat, or people who lie, and we're not going to accept them. Bifur hesya, if they tried to accept chaverut, and then when they didn't do well with it, they publicly didn't do it, then everybody knows that they're not accepting it. They weren't ready, they weren't able. There we will accept them to try again, because they didn't try to cheat. They didn't try to do it under the table. And then the Igadamre is Asud Ibrahim Bimot Muniot. If they already accepted it Bimat Muniot, then we accepted it, because this person who tried so hard to do tshuva and does it even in his private dealings, even when other people don't know about it, he's gone as far as to accept the chavirut, then we accept them. But if they do it bifarhesia only, we won't accept them because we think they're just putting on a face to the public, but underneath they're not really changing. They're just trying to convince other people that they've changed, but underneath that they haven't really changed. So the Baal Tosafot read the Mishnah or Braita from Demai, just the opposite, because of their problem that there must be an inability for people to do tshuva. So they're unable to accept Rashi's reading here, but Rabbi Meir will say, how could you ever have a statement like that? So he, first of all, changes the parties that we're speaking about here. Rashi says, it's Gazlanim, Vameharetz. Baalei Tosafot say, we're speaking about people who are Chashud, Al Maisrot, and Shvi'it, and they accepted Dibrei Chaverut. They already became Chaverim. And now we're worried about them going back or cheating on what they did, and that's the nature of what's being said here in the Braita. Rabbi Shilmaon, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karchomrim, Ben Kach, Ben Kach Mikablim. No matter what the situation is, we accept them. Shneemar, Shuvu Bonim, Shuvavim. You wayward children, come back. Or basically, Hashem says, the doors of tshuva are always open. And that's the sentiment that we know that the Rishonim express, very much so. Now, Yitzchak, Ish Kvarako, Am Rav Yochanan, Elil Kotakoto Azub. That the halacha is like that pair, mean once again, halacha is like Rav Yeshua ben Karcha. So here again, we had a slew of halachot that are brought only because Rav Yeshua ben Karcha is the party in them, and the halacha is like Rav Yeshua ben Karcha and all these halachot, even though they have nothing to do with our Gemara over here. All right, next Mishnah, which is really part of the first Mishnah in the Masechta, we already quoted it back on Daf Vov, which is Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Shlosha Lifnehem, Shlosha Achreihem, Asur. So as opposed to our Mishnah, which says only the 3 days before the holiday are restricted, Rabbi Shmuel believes it's the 3 days before and the 3 days afterwards. Now the question about why the 3 days afterwards is much harder to understand. Because the two reasons we gave back on Dov Vav and Aleph were either Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol, which clearly be asked to be before the holiday because you are providing, facilitating for him the ability to worship Avodah Zarah, or Hoda'ah, the fact that he's Har Bacha, he's going to benefit, he's going to give Hoda'ah to the Avodah Zarah. Post that, what does it matter? All this stuff is over, the Yom Eid is over. What you have to say is that the sphere of influence of a holiday impacts not only before, but afterwards. We have similar feeling like Yisru Chag, that type of concept, which is that the holiday has a sphere of influence that diminishes over time. So a guy who just went to his holiday, to his God, and all of a sudden gets a great deal right afterwards, or something great happens for him afterwards, then he's going to thank his God because he's still within that sphere of influence of being in the holiday of Avodah Zarah. To say something along those lines to understand Rabbi Yishmael, or you can say that it is just a preventative measure to say that we won't deal with them anywhere around their holiday, and so that we block out a block of time which says we won't deal with you during the holiday. And then we have the Chachamim Omrim, Lifnei Deim Asur, Lachari Deim Mutar. Before their holidays it's Asur, afterwards it is Mutar. Clearly we have a issue now because the Chachamim are saying the same thing the Tanakama said, and we have to figure out what's the difference between the Tanakama and the Chachamim. All right, so now, Amar Rav Tachlifa, Bar of Dimi, Amar Shmuel. This is a memra that we had yesterday, and I said I would speak about it today, because the memra was clearly hurt by the censors. And it's very hard to understand what it says right now. It just says, Yom Echad, the Dibre Rabbi Yishmael, the Olam Asur. It sounds like Sunday for Rabbi Yishmael is always Asur, which is very difficult to understand. You can already see in the Ein Mishpat Er Mitzvah, it says, the Dibre Rabbi Yishmael, Yom Avodat Kochavim, Olam Asur. The day of the Avodah Zarah is always Asur, and still over here, we don't have a clarity to it. If you turn back to Vav Amud Aleph, where we had this memra on Vav Amud Aleph, over there, the memra read, Yom Echad, the Divrei Rabbi Yishmael, L'Olam Asur, And there the Gemara implies that the entire week is asur. And that's what Rashi says over there, that according to him, 3 days before, 3 days afterwards, then the whole week is asur. But yeah, it's still not clear what's being said here. So if you get back to the Kitvei Yad like Menken and others who are pre the censor, all of a sudden you see what's written in the Gemara. The Gemara says, and you have the changes in the Girsa, which is, Amar Tchalifa Bar Dimi Amar Shmuel, Yom Notzri, the day of the Christians. The Divrei Rabbi Shmuel, the Olam Asur. For Rabbi Shmuel, it's always Asur. And then also, guess who else was censored? Rashi. And if you look back at Vav Amud Aleph, this is what the Rashi said in the Gemara there. Notzri Haolech B'Ta'uto Shelo'uto Aish. Christians who follow in the mistake of that man, Shetzivalahem Masodahem Yom Eid Be'echad B'Shabbat, who told them to make their holiday always on Sunday. And here again, an argument right here, there's a piece missing from Rashi, which is, that it is Asur L'Adam Yisrael, L'Seit V'Latet Imo, Sheri Yom Rishom Hu Yom Chago, because their Sunday is their Chag. So now, if you take this, according to Rabbi Yishmael, and you say that Sunday is their holiday, Rabbi Yishmael says, 3 days before is Asur, 3 days afterwards is Asur. We're never going to transact with them. You cannot deal with them, or you cannot deal with the Christians. It's clear why the censors took that out, because it would imply that there was no ability for a Jew to interact with the Christians, as well as Lashon of Rashi over here is somewhat demeaning in the sense that it says, Holech v'tauto sholoto aish, all of that was wiped out. But otherwise, the memra over here makes no sense. Vav Amud Aleph, and also on Zayin Amud Bet, it makes no sense because all it says is Yom Echad Divrei Shmuel L'Olam Asur. One day is always Asur, or Sunday is always Asur. Where does that all come from? But if you have the original Girsa Yom HaNotzri and the Rashi, it explains it to you. If Sunday is Asur and Rabbi Shmuel believes 3 days later, 3 days before, then the whole week is cut out according to Rabbi Yishmael. Right now, Chachamim Amim, Lifnei Edehem Asur, La'achar Edehem Mutar. So now when it says Chachamim, Hainu Tana Kama, Chachamim and the Tana Kama are both saying the same thing. Hain below Edehem Igemenayu. Whether you include the holiday in the enumeration or not, that's the difference between them. Tana Kama Sabar Hain below Edehem, that we already approved back in yesterday's daf, that our Mishnah in the beginning clearly says that the 3 days are independent of the holiday. Rabbanan Batrai Sabre, the later Rabbanan say, Hain Ve'edehen. They really mean that it's 2 days before and 2 days afterwards, including the holiday itself. Ibaitema. Now we'll have a bunch of other possibilities about what they argue about. Nasav and Natan, Ika Beinayu. If they did engage in business, what is the din? We saw yesterday a machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to whether Nasav and Natan is Asur or Nasav and Natan is Mutar. So the Gemara here suggests, Tanakama Savar, Nasav and Natan, Mutar. That if you did it, even though you're not supposed to do it, then whatever you did, B'diavad, is Mutar. But in Batrai Savar, Nasav and Natan, Asur. That if you did engage in this, then it is Asur. The fact that it says by the Rabbanan Batrai, Stama Kamrinan, Velok Tani Asur, Laseit Velateit, the Tanakama says that it's Asur, Laseit Velateit, Imahem. Makes it sound like that's only Lechatfilo. You're not allowed to transact with them, but B'diabad, it would be fine. The later Chachamim just say Asur. Asur sounds like Asur the Gamre. And if you do, whatever you did is Asur. So that's the reason for assuming that they think it's Asur and the Tanakam thinks it's Mutar. Others suggest that the din of Shmuel is what is between them. This din of Shmuel is extremely important. Damar Shmuel, Bigola, in Asur la Yom Edam. When it comes to the Gola, only their holiday is Asur. Just the Etzem holiday, not the days before, not the days afterwards. The Baal HaTosafot support already brought this up on Daf Bet Amud Aleph. And over there they said, well, you can't say we're holding like Shmuel because we're trading on their holidays too. We are transacting with them not only beforehand, we're interacting with them on their holidays. How could it be that we're transacting on their holidays even if you hold like Shmuel? Shmuel says, okay, the holidays are Asur. Still the holidays are Asur and we're still transacting. That's why Tosafot's looking for a different reason. What she says is based on Eva. So the Rabbeinu Tam said that the restriction was only in Takrovet Avodah Zarah. And today everything's about money, and therefore there's no takrovet avodah zarah. So now the Gemara says Tanakama itlay de Shmuel. Tanakama holds of Shmuel. Rabbanan Batrai lately do Shmuel, and the Rabbanan Batrai do not have Shmuel. Now why is that? Rashi says there's no reason to believe that one has or one doesn't have that position. Ella the kavin de lo misayim behed jamai pligay. Since the mission never tells you what they're arguing about, igal meimar litzvuye ato. We always assume that the later position is coming to add on, or to make something more Asur. And therefore over here, the situation is also that it will be more asur according to the later position. That means they won't hold of Shmuel, whereas the Tanakhama will hold of Shmuel. Now what does that mean, Bigola? Rashi over here quotes what it means. Einu bei kochavim adukim kolkach babudat kochavim. They're not so attached to their avodah zarah anymore, and rather it is what we call minhag abutehem biyatehem. They worship the avodah zarah because that's what their parents did, not because there's anything inherently religious about what they're doing. They're just following the practices of their forefathers. A good example of that today is probably Halloween. Origins in a religious holiday, and even a pagan holiday originally, but now people who practice it have no religious belief in what they are doing. They're just doing it because that's what their forefathers did, or that's what it was made into a commercial holiday. It's not necessarily a real holiday in the sense of what its original meaning was. Vod, and Rashi writes, in addition to that, demistefinan minayu. We are embarrassed or scared of them. Which is an interesting thing. Rashi is saying that the heter here derives from two things. One is that the fact that their practices are not so avodah zarah-like anymore. They're just doing it because that's what people do, not because they really believe in it. Beyond that, we also have something we're afraid of them. If you look further on, Rashi and Daf Yud Aleph Amud Bet, also commenting on this, says about the Gola, Eina nachu yocholim la'mid atzmeinu milisav li'tein mehem. We can't hold back from transacting with them, shebenehem anahu yoshvim, because we live amongst them, uparnasateinu mehem, and we depend on them for our livelihood. Vod mishum yira, we are afraid of them. So Rashi quotes actually three different reasons why Shmuel's din applies by the Gola. The one reason is that they're not so avodah zarah-like anymore, they're just practicing. But he gives two more reasons, which are probably the more important reasons. One is, our parnosa depends on them. And if you stop working with them, we're not going to have parnosa, we're not going to survive in these situations. Number two is yira, which is the problem of Ava, or the fact that they're going to get wind of the fact we're not trading them on their holidays, and they're going to get upset. And it's not going to lead to good outcomes for us, because they know that we're withholding from them on their holidays. And Rashi makes the comment over here, V'stama de milta, k'she'en yadov de kochavim takif al Yisrael ka'amar. V'stama de milta in the Mishnah is a case when the avodat kochavim don't have the upper hand. But today, where we live under their auspices, and we are subject to whatever they think or whatever they want, it's a very different game. And there to say that l'fnei dam is asur, it's enough that their holiday is asur. And even that, it's not clear that we can even keep. Right now, the Gemara tries ibay dema, the nochum amadai iga benayu. The nochum, the median, is what's between them. Tanya nochum amadai omer, ein asur la yom echad l'fnei dam. He has a position, unlike those in our Mishnah, that one day beforehand is restricted, only Erev Yom Tov problematic, but not the 3 days before. Tanakama late the Nachum Amadai. Clearly the Tanakama does not hold like Nachum Amadai because he says 3 days explicitly. Rabban Batrai, it lay the Nachum Amadai. And the Rabban Batrai would just say Asur, they're going to hold like Nachum Amadai. What's interesting is Rashi says that usually the Chachamim, or the latter position, is Latuye, comes to add on or to make it more Asur. But in most of the cases here, they turn out to be the Kula, because the Tanakama gave a more explicit statement than the Chachamim, and they turn out to be the Kula in many of these instances. Now, the Gemara is going to deal with Nachum HaMadai, just like we did with Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. So, Gufa, Nachum HaMadai Omer, Einu Asur LeYom Echad Lifnei Dehem. Amro Lo, Nishtaka Davar VeLo Ne'emar. So Rashi says over here, Lo Yatzad Davar Zeh Mipi Adam LeOlam. Nobody ever uttered this, or Lishna Achrina, Lo Yatzad Davar Zeh LaChutz. This never was in the public realm. So then they said, VeLo Mer, Vayika Rabbonim Batrai, the Kaima Kavatei. Wait a minute, he just said that the Rabbonim Batrai could possibly hold him like Nachum HaMadai. Man Chachamim, who are the Chachamim in the Mishnah? Nachum HaMadayu. They're Nachum HaMadai, that's why. Here's a case where they're identifying the Chachamim as being a Dat Yachid. So if you say the Yivayt Eima, that the Chachamim hold of his position, but that's him. It's not that other people said it, he's the only one who has that position. Tanya Yidach, we have another bright thing. Nachum HaMadai Omer, Machrim Lehen Sus Zachar. Question here of whether there's a Vav in here or not. Sus Zachar Vizakein. Or is it Susachar, Zakein, Bemilchama? It's a question if these are two different qualifications, or it needs to have both of them in order to be sold to them. This has to do with a Mishnah we're going to see later on, and the Gemara over there, which is, you're not allowed to trade in Behemot Gasot with the non-Jews. That's a problem of She'ilah, because if you lend them to them, then it ends up with problems of Malacha on Shabbat. And then there's a separate issue, which is you're not allowed to sell weapons to them. You're not allowed to sell them weapons or items that can be used to engage in war or engage in killing of Jews. You're not allowed to sell to them. So, in that Mishnah, A horse is restricted because it is used in battle. It's used for fighting with. And a horse also happens to be a behema gasa, so it should be restricted for both of those reasons. So now, Nachum Madai says, if it's a sus zakhar, if it's a male horse, or it is a zakain, or it's a zakhar zakain, then you can sell it to them. And so Rashi says the reason is because it's milta de lo shchicha. It's an unusual circumstance. You won't learn from it to other mechirot of animals. And halkav milta de lo shchicha, in a case that's not so common, lo gozer rabbanon. Rabbanon didn't put the gzera in place. So Rashi says the reason behind Rachum Amadai is that a zakhar zakain is so unusual that it's just not captured by the gzera. And the animal is going to deteriorate anyway. And it's not going to deteriorate. First of all, it's not really good for malacha. It's also not good for battle. And so it doesn't serve any of the purposes that the Mishnah later on says are problematic. And for that reason, it's not under the rubric of the gzera. Although the Balei Tosafot, who think that the girsa should be zachar v'zakein, each one of them independently is a heter, they believe that's because they're not useful in battle. There's a high likelihood that they might hurt their rider more than they will be helpful in terms of their assistance in the battle. The idea being that such a horse, if it has a zakein, that for sure it's not ra'oi. It's not helpful for you because it can't really do what it's supposed to do. Now the zakhar is also a problem, supposedly, because they're much wilder stallions, and that means that the rider is more likely to be killed by his own horse in the battle than it is to help him in the battle. So he feels that that's not a problem. Gemara says, Amrulo nishtaka davar v'lo ne'amar. Nobody ever uttered this, or this never came out in the public realm. Gemara says, Vayika ben b'teira, dekoyika matei. In that mission, the sheet of ben b'teira, that's not ben b'teira matir besus. He says, you're allowed to sell horses to them. Now, ben b'teira says, you're allowed to sell horses to them because the primary usage of a horse is for riding and not carrying loads. So when you ride a horse, chai no set, that's mo, it's only an issue de rabbonah. So even if it's a gzera, we don't want it because of malacha that's going to be done at Shabbat, Ben B'teira says that a horse is primarily used for riding, which is not a problem on Shabbat because it's only an Issur D'Rabbanan. You're not going to have an Issur gzera on an Issur D'Rabbanan not to sell it to them. Ben B'teira lo maflik ben zecharim nekevot. Ben B'teira never makes a distinction between male and female horses. Iu deka maflik ben zecharim nekevot kerabbanan sphirle. It's clear he who differentiates between male and female is holding up the Rabbanan. And he's saying, within the Rabbanan's position, I'm trying to make this distinction. So Ben B'teira thinks the problem with the horse is that it's a behema gasa. And again, if you ride it and chayno say that's mo, it's only an issue of shvut. On Shabbat, you're not making zera because of an issue that's possibly the Rabbanan. Then the Chachamim restricted sus, not just because of Shabbat, but also because of clay zayin, because it's used in war. And so now over here, where he makes a distinction between male and female, it's clearly not an issue of chai no se'et atzmo or a problem of shvut on Shabbat versus malachat Shabbat. It's a problem of whether it's a vehicle for engagement in war. And he's differentiating between males and females, and that's within the position of the chachamim. Nobody ever said that in the position of the chachamim. Tanya, Nachum Amadai Omer, Eshevet mitaser zera b'yerek v'zirin. Eshevet is probably dill, something along those lines. Others say that it refers to anise, and you can see that in the Rashi. It says, "Belashon romi anito." It's similar to anise or fennel, and that might be what's being spoken about over here. That is mitaser. You take up masrot, zera, seeds, yerek, when it's vegetation, or zirin, when it gets into stems or stalks. Different stages along the way. So if it is in the stage where it is just stems, then you can also take it up. If it turns into vegetables, you can also take it up. If let it dry out and become seeds, you can also use it then. In any one of those stages, you have to take off masrot from it because they're all edible and they're all usages that are considered to be primary usages, normal usage of it. Again, they say, never everybody else had said that. Vayika, Rabbi Eliezer, the Koyika Matei. Don't we have Rabbi Eliezer who also holds that? It's not. We have a Mishnah. Exactly what we are saying. That's in a case, as Rashi explains over here, when you're speaking about it in the garden. Things that grow within the garden, that everybody agrees you can take off masrot from all of these items, or you're commanded to take off masrot. But when you're talking about ones out in the field, whether it's wild or grown on a large scale basis, there they believe that everybody thinks that it's like chardal, like mustard, which means that they only grow it for its seed. When you grow it in your garden, you grow it for any one of these items. But if you grow it commercially, or if it's out in the wild, people only use it for its seeds, and therefore he's wrong, Nachum Amadai, as well. So Rav Acha ben Myumi comes with a complaint to Abaye and says, Gavar Rabba Ato Me'atrin, a great man came from our city, meaning from Adai, you know, we're from the same place, Komil Dudamar, Amrele Nishtaka Davar V'no Ne'amar. Anything he says, anything he pipes up, they say, never heard of it, nobody ever said that. They are dismissive of everything that he says. What's going on over here? Amar Ikechada Davdina Kavate. No, no, there's one thing we hold like him. There is one statement that he made where we said that actually other people had said that, which is, D'Tanya, Nachum Amadei Omer, Shol Adam Tzrachav B'Shomeat Fila. A person is allowed to ask for his personal requests in the bracha of Shomeat Fila. So Amar Lei, he said back to him, Bar Mina Da'i, that doesn't count. Da'atayu Aba Ashley Rav Ravei. The reason you're passing over there like him is not because of him. It's because there are other big guns that say the same thing. So you're not passing like Nachum Amadai, you're passing like the other big guns. And it happens to be that he said the same thing. Now, Ashley Rav Ravei, Rashi over here gives two translations. One is that these are thick ropes, which are used on the ships, either to hold the ship or put up the mast. Or Ashley Rav Ravei means big trees, giant trees. In other places, Rashi says the mast of the ship. But it means like big guns, people who are serious. Tamidei Chachamim, D'Tanya. Person should first ask for his needs, and then afterwards, davin shmon esrei. Shneamar, tefila l'ani ki atof, lifnei Hashem ishpoch sicho. That the tefila of the ani ki atof, Rashi over here translates oteif as atifat nafsho v'dagat libo. Things that are wrapped around his nefesh and things that he's worried about. The things that are enveloping him now. Things that are bothering him right now. That atifa over here is lashon ke'ev u'prichat alev mitoch sara. It's pain, and that which emerges from the heart, from pain. That's what Rashi says, yatov, again, it's the things that are plaguing him, enveloping him, that are bothering him. It's only interesting, because Rashi, back on the daf on Shabbat, on Hayom Aleph, also translated yatov, because we quoted there, yakiruach lefanai yatov, unishamot ani asiti. Over there, Rashi translates yatov, on Hayom Aleph, yatov hu ha-me'acher. Those are the ones that delay, or are late. So it's interesting over here, he gives a totally different translation for the word, and I don't even know if you can connect between the two. It seems to be the opposite over here. Here they're trying to bring it up to the front. The things that are plaguing him, he has to do first, and it's not me'acher. So it's interesting that Rashi translates it differently over there. So it says here, tefilah le'ki atof, the things that are bothering him he should express, that's his tefilah. Lifnei Hashem yishpoch sicho, ein sicha ela tefilah. And sicha is known as tefilah, shenemar v'yitzek yitzchak, Lasuach Basadeh, which is where we know in the Gemara in Brachot, for Tfilat Mincha, that Yitzchak daven Tfilat Mincha. But those of us do point out there that the Gemara searches for a different source over there for the fact that Sicha is Tfilah, which is Eshpoch Lefanav Sichi. And they use that word to teach us. He says you need both of them. Wanted them to teach you that the word Sicha means Tfilah. Wanted to teach you that it was Kavua, that he did this on a regular basis and he was actually establishing a Tfilah. Mishua married Palel, Vachar Kachin She'el Tzrachov. He should first daven, shmon esrei, and then ask for his needs. Shneamar, eshpoch lefanav sichi, tzarati lefanav agid. That I will first spill out my tefilah sichi, and then afterwards, tzarati, that which pains me, I will speak about. Rabbi Lezer, anamiktiv, eshpoch lefanav sichi. What does each one of them do with the other one's pasuk? What does Rabbi Lezer do with eshpoch lefanav sichi? Hachikamar, eshpoch lefanav sichi, bizman shetzarati lefanav agid. I will daven once my tzara is already in front of him. And that it's not a sequential statement. It's a statement that when I'm engaged already, once I've already given over my tzar, then I'll be engaged in tefillah. Yeshua nami aktiv, what does Rabbi Yeshua do with Rabbi Elazar's pasuk? Tefillah ani ki atof hachikamar. Eimatai tefillah l'ani. When is it the time for the ani to ask for his needs? Bizman shelifnei Hashem yishpoch sicho. That's after he's already daven. When he's already put up his tefillah, then it's time for him to ask for his needs. Michtei, karai, lokem ardaiki, velokem ardaiki. The psukim don't give you evidence in either direction. Both of them have a pasuk supporting their position. But my kemiflige, what is their machloket? Kidere erish, darish rabbi simlai. It's the drush of rabbi simlai that they're arguing about. The darish rabbi simlai. Lolam yisader adam shvacho shel makom, v'achakach yitpalel. Person first put together the praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then David. Minolon, mimoshe rabbeinu. Moshe rabbeinu is the paradigm, bichtiv. Hashem Elokim ata chelota larot edavdecho. You began to show your servant, Moshe is praising Hashem for all the things that he does, and then he makes his request. Dibashrei ebrana veret aretz atova. Let me go into Eretz Yisrael. You've shown me the battles with Sikon and Og. You've shown me that you can see Eretz Yisrael. You've shown me all these things. Can you please let me go into Eretz Yisrael? So first he praises Hashem, and then afterwards he makes his request. That's the formulation that we have for our Shmon Esrei. We first have Shlosh Rishonot, which are Shemach, and then afterwards we are Shoel Tzrachim. Rabbi Yeshua Sarah Yofinu Mi Moshe. Rabbi Yeshua says, Moshe's the paradigm. We use that paradigm to teach us how to do this. Well, as a Samar, Lo Yofinu Mi Moshe. You can't learn from Moshe. Shani Moshe, the Rav Guvrei. Moshe's a big guy, big gun. He knows how to do Shemach to Hashem. We don't know how to do Shemach to Hashem, so how can we copy what Moshe Rabbeinu did? And that might be similar to what we have with regards to Smichat Gula the Tefillah, that the reason that we do Gal Yisrael before Shmoneh Esrei is to show that we believe that Hashem has the capacity to answer, respond, and do whatever needs to be done. And that Emunah is what leads us into Shmoneh Esrei to be the ones that beseech Hashem. And similarly over here, their argument over here is which of these two frameworks makes it more that the person is demonstrating his emunah in Hashem, and then through that, does whatever is next. So going to Rabbi Eliezer, asking your needs from Hashem is a demonstration of your belief that Hashem can make the difference and has the capacity to make the difference. Then afterwards, you're prepared already now to give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu after you've accepted the emunah by Hashem. Now then Rabbi Yeshua believes the other way around, that once a person gives praise to Hashem, that is a declaration of his belief in Hashem. And then once he's done that, now he can make his requests because they're in the context of his demonstrating that he believes that Hashem has those capacities. And here's the third opinion, which is what we subscribe to. Not like Rabbi Eliezer. Not like Rabbi Yeshua. People ask for whatever they need in the bracha of Shomeya Tefillah, and that goes back to what he said. Abai says, the reason you're passing like Nachum HaMadai is not because of him, it's because here the Chachamim believe like him that you do it in Shomeya Tefillah. Amar Rav Yehuda, brother of Shmuel Bar Shilat Mishmei de Rav. You have it in the name of Rav now. Afa Pisham Rushol Adam Tzracha B'Shomeya Tefillah. Even though the Chachamim say that a person should ask for whatever his needs are in Shomeya Tefillah. Avalim Balomar B'Sof Kol Bracha Bracha Me'en Kol Bracha Bracha Omer. At the end of every bracha, if you want to add in topically relevant items, you can add in them. If a person needs parnosa, they do it at the end of brachalenu. You need refuah, you do it at the end of refainu. So you can insert them. We have that in refainu, some of the sidurim have you here at zone there. So you can ask for refuah. So topically relevant, you can do in any of the brachot that are relevant, or you can do it in the generic bracha, which is shomeya tefillah. So I'm Rabbi Chir Ba'ashi, I'm a Rav. Again, this is quoted in the name of Rav. Av pi shamru shol adam tzrachah b'shomeya tefillah. If you have someone who's sick, you do it in bracha of Refa'inu. You do it there. I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Even though we say now the person asks all of his needs in Shomeya Tefillah, if he wants to say it after he's finished davening, meaning before you say Yi Ratzon in the Elokai Nitzor, you want to say it there, afilu kaseder yom ha-kippurim omer. Then you can go on forever, you can ask whatever you want, you can speak forever. So over here, there are a couple of things implied from this. The first of which is, the only place to make requests is in the middle of tefillah. That's number one. Number two is, that if you're going to ask short things, you can ask them in the middle of tefillah. You're going to go on, you should do it at the end of tefillah. The Baal HaTosafot already here asks, wait a minute, the mashma ba b'emsa tefillah lo, sounds like you can't go on in the middle of tefillah. On Bahab, how come? In the middle of Slachlan, we go on about these things. How can we do that? When you're in the Tzibor, it's different. And he proves it from the fact that the Krovitz, which we don't do anymore, which is that on the holidays, as well as the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they used to add in Piyutim in the middle of the first three brachot of Shmoneh Esrei. He says, how can you do that? You don't like to be Shoel, be Shomeya Tefillah. What are we doing there? So that must be Tzibor Shiny. Then in Tzibor it's different. And that is the principle that we use in terms of adding in like certain things like Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaKippurim, things that we add in the throat, Shlosh Rishonot, Shlosh Achonot, this is that Tzibor Shiny, or In times of sakanat nefashot, it's different, and therefore we allow for those dispensations. And the Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah in Brachot actually lay out a hierarchy about what we learn. And that is four different dinim. Echad, shebebrikat shomei tefillah yachol b'shol kol tzrachav b'chol inyan sheyirtzeh. That shomei tefillah is a generic bracha, and you can ask for whatever you want. Adin hasheni, shim balo mar b'sof kol bracha bracha mein kol bracha bracha, omer. Afilu shelo yelet tzarcho mamash mutar. I mean, it's not exactly for your needs. Kemen sheomer oto b'lashon ravim, miu b'lashon yachid, asur la'omro. So you're allowed to insert things at the end of the bracha, b'lashon ravim, even though it's not exactly asking for your needs, but it's asking in a more generic sense, that's permitted at the end of each bracha, and that's only true at the end of the bracha, not in the middle of the bracha. But din ha-shlishi, shim shuel tzrachat mamash, if you're asking really for your own personal needs, k'sho'eno cholesh, yesh lo b'toch beito, then you could say it even in the lashon of a yachid, and even in the middle of a bracha. The fourth din is shebesofa tefillah ben kodem yulratzon ben achar yulratzon yola arich v'lomar kirtzano ben b'shalon yachid ben b'shalon rabim ben tzrachav mamash ben tzarchei tzibur. Then it's a free reign after Shmoneh Esrei, whether it's before yulratzon, after yulratzon, you can ask b'shalon yachid, b'shalon rabim. You can ask for your needs, for the tzibur's needs, whatever it is, you can ask at that point in time. And the Beit Yosef goes on to point out that the Rabbeinu Yonah learns that from our Gemara over here. And even though it looks like the Memrot are identical or saying the same thing, the Rabbeinu Yonah breaks down each one of these Memrot, indicating that there's a different din being said here. That when you want to do it at the end of the bracha, you have to do it with Lashon Rabim. If it's a personal request and you do it with Lashon Yachid, you can do it even in the middle of the bracha. If it's any questions or anything that you need to do, you do it in Shomei Tefillah. At the end of Tefillah, no restrictions. You can do what you want after or before Yuratzon. And then right afterwards, he brings what the Baal Tosafot say over here, that all this is governed by if it's the Yachid that's doing it. But if it's Zibur, then you can even have Tzrachav B'Shlosh Rishonot and Shlosh Achronot. And as the Baal Tosafot indicate over here, there seem to be many other exceptions for the Zibur as opposed to the Yachid. The Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kuf Yutet brings all of these positions of the Rabbeinu Yonah down the halacha. And the Shulchan Aruch in Kuf Chav Bet writes, "Ein ochon lomar tachnumin kodim liyuratzon ela achar." That's better to say these requests after the yuratzon rather than before. And the Mishnah Berurah explains the reason as being the Tov Yoter Likvot Tfilot Tzkol Inyanim Etzrichim Lo Achar Shitziem Kol Yudchet. The best place to do your requests is after you finish Shmoneh Esrei. The kavan be brigat shmoy tvila, rather than doing them in shomer tvila kedei, because it's the reif anot kadish or kedusha, yechol anot achar amirato yula ratzon the kuleyama. So then that would free you of being locked into Shmoneh Esrei, because after yula ratzon you're open then to answer kadish and kedusha, and you won't be bound because you're outside the realm of Shmoneh Esrei, and that makes more sense to do that. And if you want to say yula ratzon again after you made your request, you can do that again. But in that way, you've now opened up the possibility of responding to the tzibur while you're being marich in your tefillah. Okay, we'll stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Chedom and Aleph.